Let me, it's a great, great pleasure now to introduce Dr. Vanessa Carey. Dr. Vanessa Carey is the director, the chief executive officer of SEED Global Health, working and with a lot of experience in at country level. And she will be followed by Secretary, United States Special Presidential Envoy for Climate, John Kerry. So Vanessa, over to you, please.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nera. And as you just heard from Dr. Nera and also Dr. Tedros, the pace of climate change and its growing impact are really at a tipping point. And nowhere is this more clear than at the intersection of climate and change in health. Our fragile progress is being lost. According to the WHO, where we are, 1 in 4 of the world's deaths today are from preventable environmental causes. Our critically underserved and under-resourced health systems and our health workers cannot deal with the burden of disease today, let alone the burden exacerbated by climate change tomorrow. Yet this dire picture can actually be one of optimism, because before us lies a choice, a pathway to create a cascade of benefits to protect our planet, our livelihoods, our health, wealth, and well-being. If we embrace a health-centered response to climate change, with smarter investment, we can have catalytic impact across multiple sectors. Together, we can create extraordinary and collective gains if we stop operating in silos. Investments in reducing air pollution, which causes 7 million deaths per year, more than we saw officially recorded globally in the entire COVID pandemic, will prevent a future loss of almost $50 trillion we've spent since 2010 to address this impact. Investments in green energy for health systems will decrease our carbon contribution and ensure stable access to medicine, oxygen, blood, and services for those most vulnerable, for our patients, my patients. Investing in strong, responsive, resilient health systems and the health workers that enable them, which is near and dear to my heart because I am one, will allow us to address both the coming flood of disease from climate change, as well as the existing pandemics of HIV, TB, malaria, maternal mortality, and NCDs that we are already fighting today. In the organization which I lead, SEED Global Health, we have already seen this impact on the ground in the countries where we work. Our critical mission to train frontline health workers is becoming even more urgent. In Malawi, in deep partnership with the government, we are helping to tackle the worst outbreak of cholera in the country's history, driven by ferocious storms accelerated by climate change. And when Cyclone Freddy took out the bridges to essential birthing units, we help provide additional services to existing units so that women could deliver safely when they couldn't reach those. These investments will help grow GDPs, reduce migration, and even our CO2 footprint as healthier people seek less services and use less energy and resources. The news of a first ever day of health at COP28 is welcome, but only if accompanied by a commitment to end a pandemic of expedient and poor choices. Health must be mainstreamed into the debate and championed by leaders from local communities to the G7. What does this look like? First, health must be included in the cover decision, in the global stocktake, and in the metrics that we measure. Second, we need a multi-sectoral consensus to mobilize unprecedented levels of smart financing for health and to identify win-win investments in health through current climate financing mechanisms, which prioritize health, equity, alongside mitigation and adaptation. Today, only 2% of adaptation funding and 0.5% of overall funding for climate change is allocated to health. Third, we must move from community engagement to true investment in community leadership. Communities have lived experiences that are not siloed. Communities respond in ways that are interconnected, integrated, and transformative to their needs. Our collective global community must respond in the same way. Our painful truth is that a decision to invest in our health and well-being through climate change cannot be deferred. I say this as a mother of two children, but also as a daughter of a tireless optimist. I was raised by parents who instilled in me a deep belief in the power of service and of sacrifices made in the determined fight for this planet and our relationship to it. I have been taught the power of hope, the strength of diversity and differences, that there is always a solution to be found, and to pursue relentlessly what is right and what is just. In the most quiet of moments, I have been reminded to never turn your back on someone in need. The fight for our better future, whether through stronger health systems or a greener climate, are interlinked and span generations. It is my legacy, it is my children's legacy, and it needs to be our collective legacy. Because right now, we are fighting for our collective need and survival, for our health and well-being, for our one Earth, and for our global community. So I am delighted to welcome my father, who also happens to be the U.S. Presidential Special Envoy on Climate Change, John Kerry.
Well, good morning to all of you, or I guess early afternoon. And Vanessa, thank you so much for not just what you're doing. Thank you for those really generous and moving comments. Can you hear me?
Oh, and these is in the earphones. Good to know. Thank you.
Can you all hear me?
Now we can.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Thank you so much. I apologize. Ness, let me just say how proud I am of what you are doing and the work you're doing, which is phenomenal. And I just confess to everybody that I really didn't think enough about the link between climate and health until Vanessa started making the science-based arguments pretty obvious to me, and really talked about global health in a larger context in view of what is happening to the climate of the planet. And Vanessa, I thank you for what you were doing, and I thank you for that educational effort with your dad. Thanks for making that connection, and I'm grateful and blessed for it. Also want to thank Dr. Tedros, alias Morgan Freeman. Great to be with you again, Dr. Tedros. You and I began when I was Secretary of State, and I've enjoyed watching the extraordinary battle that you've been involved in on behalf of the WHO and everybody in the world. And Dr. Nehra, thank you for your efforts, and the entire WHO community. I'm so grateful for what you do. And I know what a bitter period it has been with COVID and how many unfair attacks were leveled. That seems to be the price of public service today. But we are all deeply grateful to you for what you did over the last few years. And equally importantly, for sounding the alarm about the climate crisis. So thank you, not just for this event and what you're doing, but thank you for being warriors in this battle. And make no mistake, folks, it is a battle. I've been involved in public life for more than 50 years now, going back to a war in Vietnam, and in the Senate for 28 years, and Secretary of State, now Special Presidential Envoy. And I've never seen people so willing to wrap their arms around ignorance and a certain kind of arrogance and avoid facts and be unwilling to do what the facts are screaming at us to do. And that's what brings us all here today and to the work that you do every single day. I am one of the few people on this program without a background in health, other than trying hard to live healthily. But there's really no polite way to put it. The climate crisis is killing people. It is knowingly, wittingly allowing people to die and infecting them with disease and providing them with air that kills people because we're not willing to take the steps necessary to do what we know we need to do. And what people have been screaming about for 30 years, 35 years plus now. Many of us were in Rio. I was there. I was there in 1988 when Jim Hansen first testified to us about what is happening. And every year now, millions of people around this planet are dying because fossil fuel and methane emissions called greenhouse gas pollution, not just gas, pollution. And we used to care about pollution. We used to apply a polluter pays principle to the concept of pollution. But now those methane emissions and CO2 emissions and nitrous oxide and other emissions are escaping into the atmosphere, being fed by the way in which we continue to choose to fuel our vehicles, propel our vehicles, heat our homes, light our factories, and so forth. Those emissions result in disgraceful, polluted air quality, extreme heat, loss of water, loss of crops, loss of ecosystems, and at every stage, the loss of life. And the truth is that responsible people, particularly economists and people who make enormous decisions about trillions of dollars and its allocation to the building of capital and investment around the world, ignore the real cost of what we're choosing to do. The cost of coal is not the cost of mine to burning. It's the cost of black lung disease. It's the cost of increases in the problems of emphysema, of heart disease, of all the other downstream causes. And the ash that is filling up lakes and rivers and denying people the right to fish or swim in various places. The warming of the ocean, 90% of the heat on the planet goes into the ocean. And that heat is changing the chemistry of the ocean, and it is warming the ocean in dangerous ways as we're witnessing, not the least of which is the possible tipping point we may have reached with respect to the Arctic and the Antarctic and the coral reefs and the Barents Sea. And of course, permafrost, which is thawing around the world, which releases massive amounts of methane. So the choice really is fairly obvious. And if the consequences of what I've just described don't underscore a health crisis, I don't know what will. So when President Biden or I say this is the decisive decade for action, that is not two political people speaking. That's not a liberal or a conservative or a Democrat or a Republican speaking. Those are people who have listened to the facts that you and others have helped to put on the table. And what adds insult to injury, surely, for everyone, is that everything we're talking about that are the consequences of this crisis are preventable. All preventable. I'm glad to say that many nations have made the decision to do more. 20 nations equal 76% of all of the emissions on the planet. And we are now on a course to reduce our emissions by the scientifically arrived at goal of trying to have a 45% reduction by 2030, excuse me. And our goal is actually 50 to 52% reduction. And we're quite convinced that we'll be able to get there. But we have a lot of other countries in the world that continue to build coal-fired power plants and continue to burn that coal-fired power. So President Biden has developed a program called PREPARE. It's the President's Emergency Response Plan for Adaptation and Resilience. It is now helping more than 500 million people in developing countries to manage the impacts of the climate crisis. And just last month, President Biden announced that the major economies forum, that is the 20 largest economies of the world, that we're going to immediately put $1 billion into the Green Climate Fund. And we are working on releasing tens of billions, hundreds of billions from the private sector by bringing them to the table and creating blended finance mechanisms and other ways of investing these critical funds in the solution. As Vanessa eloquently pointed out, lives are not just going to be lost in the future. we're losing many more lives every year than we lost in the Holocaust in World War II. Maybe 3 to 4 times as many lives now. Extreme heat is now increasing around the world. There are millions of people who are sleeping outdoors in India right now because they can't find relief. And even at nighttime, it's 30 degrees centigrade in the air temperature. So we have our work cut out for us, folks. But here's the good thing. And I just close on this point to all of you. We have to be led by common sense. And if there's a threat which we see to our health, we ought to, as public people, demand that our governments and the private sector are going to respond appropriately. This finance gap that we face is really the greatest stumbling block of all right now. Well, maybe of all. We also have to fight back, and you all can provide the testimonials and impact. We have to fight back against the greed and the sort of willful blindness that people adopt to the reality of where we find ourselves. There is barely a space on this planet where there is genuine sustainability. And where you find it, you will almost always find indigenous peoples who are managing that land and their air in a more responsible way. Most of the planet is made up of indigenous areas of land that have been guarded for centuries by people who apply a different ethic to their daily living. So my friends, we can win this battle. We came out of Glasgow and Sharm el-Sheikh with the IEA telling us that if we did everything that was promised, we would actually hold the Earth's temperature increase to 1.8 degrees out of Glasgow, 1.7 degrees out of Sharm el-Sheikh. And if we do what is necessary in Dubai in December, we could perhaps get close to the 1.5 degrees. It is doable. It's hard. It's really hard. And it's being made harder by the day by all of this new, you know, gas and oil and fossil fuel burning that is taking place despite the realities that we face. But we can change this. I know this. I've seen that kind of change happen previously, and we have now got more venture capital money moving into green hydrogen, battery storage, direct air carbon capture storage and utilization, the possibilities of new energy coming from sources that we've never been able to tap, like fusion, small modular nuclear reactors. Things are happening. And you all, each and every one of you, can frankly provide the best testimonials of all to move public people to take the action that we need, because you can tell the stories of real people and of the suffering that takes place because we refuse to make the most obvious choices. So thank you for gathering to consider this connection of climate and health. It is the connection. Climate is a matter of health, and health is always going to be impacted by what happens to our climate. So please continue on the front lines. Thank you for your advocacy. Thank you for your service. Thank you for what you do for humankind. Let's win this battle.